short and simple.
Okay, and the date is the...
Today is the 27th of
February.
2004.
2004,
yes.
There we go. Okay, I'd like to just start off the interview with talking about your family's past, and specifically just to kind of get an idea of where you're coming from, where your parents came from, you know, the towns or the villages where they came from and their occupations and their background, first of all.
I think we've been very, very fortunate in terms of knowing exactly where we come from. My family comes from Kutch, Gujarat, and they were Romani blacksmiths. They used to roam around in bullock carts with anvil, fire, and big hammers and all sorts of tools for blacksmiths. And what we used to do is to fix somebody's cart that broke down, or farmers on the way needed tools made, and that's what my forefathers did. They were blacksmiths in real sense, but they were wandering blacksmiths, Romani, and that's where we originate from.
Sorry?
And we got family history and tree going back to 1400s. We've been very fortunate.
All the way back.
That's right.
Fantastic.
And what we have is now that people started to settle in and started to settle in towns, villages, and so on. We have a small town where we have a sort of place where all the records are kept, and we go to sort of worship there once in a while. And one of my great-great-granddads had a wish back in 1600s. You know, what used to happen is that if there was sort of war between two factions or in town, or somebody sort of stole somebody's cattle, there would have been a war to sort of get things back. And he died in one of those little wars. And his wish was that every one of his grandchild, once in their lifetime, comes to visit him. And his sort of memory is there, and everybody goes to visit him there, where he was cremated.
Fantastic.
And we still do it. I still got photographic record of it. When I took my son and my father took us there, we got the records that we went to visit him. And it was a wonderful feeling that you know where you come from, where you belong, and having your family history, it's a great advantage to know, and your children could sort of also have sense of belonging.
Because that's quite unusual as well in India, because a lot of stuff used to be kind of word of mouth, you know, it was just recorded that way, but for something to actually be able to trace it right back like that, that's pretty good. What about your mother? Where is she from?
My mother comes from a small town known as Gundara, and that is near the city of Morbi, something like 25, 30 kilometers away from there. And my father comes, then they were settled in a town called Nani Barar. That is also something like 40 kilometers away from Morbi. And that's where they come from. And my father and mother used to tell a story that they got married. My mother was 2.5 years old, and my father was 7 years old. And their family had agreed that they would get married. But mind you, my mum went to her in-laws when she was 20 years old. So that's how they got married.
So that was the intention?
That's right.
Did they know each other then as they were growing up? Was there any connection, or did they only then
meet? They used to play together.
Really?
Yeah, and that's how they knew each other.
Yeah.
But then my father, he was born in 1920s. Mm-hmm. And when he was 16 years old, he came to Africa. Because one of my other great uncles had established some sort of blacksmith workshop in Africa. And my father went down to work with him. And then he worked, and when he was around 22, 23 years old, he called my mum back to Africa. And then My brothers and sisters are all born in Africa.
But you were born...
I was born in Baroda. And I've still visited the building where I was born.
Wow.
And it's wonderful to be able to see where you come from.
Yeah.
And I married Kailash in Baroda as well. So I've got very strong links with city of Baroda.
Oh, fantastic. When your father and mother settled then in Africa, whereabouts did they...
They settled in Nairobi, Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
And my father worked for some other companies and so on for several years.
Mm-hmm.
But back in 1945, 46, he decided to do something himself. And he started a small workshop, which is still going on, run by my uncles and so on, family business.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wonderful feeling. They used to stay as an extended family.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle, aunts, and everybody used to live together. So it was a great feeling.
So the kind of lifestyle that they had then was very family...
Family-oriented. And as I said, I was born in India,
mm-hmm.
But brought to Kenya when I was little. And I grew up, studied in Kenya. I studied in Swahili, because that was the national language when I went to school. So I learned how to speak, read, write Swahili.
Okay.
And I know that my mum used to teach me Gujarati, and I used to hate it. But she used to pull over here and say, come on, you must learn this. And I'm grateful to her for that.
Okay.
That we learned Gujarati. And that's sort of given us an enrichness in languages.
Mm-hmm. What was life like just for yourself, aside from school, just growing up? Did you actually live in the city, or were you outside?
We used to live in the suburbs of Nairobi.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a wonderful time, I think. Basically, because our cousins and uncle and aunts and everybody used to live together,
mm-hmm.
we didn't even realize who is who. It was one family, and you know, even now, all the cousins and everyone who grew together, we still feel as if we are brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great feeling, and playing, we had no shortage of playmates, because lots of us were there. And we had a very big garden, and I remember playing there when we were little. And I think most Hindu households, you would find a small temple in their homes.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that early in the morning, mum and dad and everyone else used to get together and say a prayer, and then again in the evening. So it was a wonderful feeling. They used to take us to temple, many other religious ceremonies. So that's how we sort of got used to Hindu way of life. Even today, because of what my mum, dad, and sort of family taught us, I'm still a vegan. Not because of religion, but because the way you brought up, it stays with you forever.
What about, was there much interaction with other communities in Nairobi? I mean, obviously there was a lot of interaction with the Hindu community, but you know, the black community or white community, if there was any there, or
I think
other religion, was there much interaction?
I think basically we had lots of neighbors from other religions, Islam, Christians, and even the indigenous population there. We had very good relations with them, because we had neighbors who came from African background. We had neighbors who came from other sort of different backgrounds and different religions.
Mm-hmm.
But as children, we never thought of religion in any way, but everybody was the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's given us a very open mind and respect other religions as well.
You mentioned that you had quite a strong religious background and that you'd go to the temple and things. How much did the temple actually play a part in your family's life? Were you very connected with the temple, or you know, were you visitors? Or,
but
no?
Because we lived in a little isolated area,
mm-hmm.
The good thing was that the prayers were said at home.
Okay.
We had a temple room
okay.
at home. And I remember that either my uncle, father, or everybody used to get together and sort of recite Srimad Bhagavad Gita. And we learned from there, and they used to explain what's happening, what Lord Krishna did, what was his teachings, and it was way of life. And one of the things they taught us is that you always respect yourself, but you would get a respect back provided you had respect for others. And they also taught us one very good sort of principle, and that was that you do things for yourself, but when you've done something for somebody else, then you have achieved something. And I think that stuck with us even now. We feel that obviously everybody does things for themselves, but when you do something for community, do something for a friend, do something for relations, and if you have something, share. And that's always been with us. And even now we believe that if we are well off, look after your family, look after friends, look after community, and if you have something, share it with others. And I think that has given us a very sort of open mind, very good way of living. And when I had finished my studies and so on, my parents started to move to UK because of the political conditions in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And they came to live in Leicester.
How old were you at that point then?
When they came, I was still in Africa.
Okay.
I was something like 19. And they had moved over here. This is back in 71, 72.
Mm-hmm.
And I came here when I was 22 years old, first time, and felt quite amazed when people used to talk about Britain. We thought Britain was paradise. Britain had lovely buildings, big mansions. And my first impression when I came to Heathrow Airport, yeah, this looks a lovely airport. As soon as we got out and I started looking at all these brick houses, God, it was a cultural shock.
Uh-huh.
Is this London? And they said, yes. We went to a few friends' home, and they had two down and three up. And everywhere we went, it was all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were brought up in a very big house, several rooms. We had a dining table. It seated something like 20, 25 people in one go. And come here and you can sit four. And said, good God, where have you ended up?
What's happened?
And because back in Kenya, we had a family business. We were well established. And when we came here, obviously, when you come go somewhere, you don't have all the facilities you used to. So I remember when I first came, I said, I'm going back. And my mum said, no, you're not. And I stayed there for a couple of months and then found a job.
Mm-hmm.
And first day I remember me going to work, my mum stood in the window and she cried. Because over there we had cars, we had drivers, we were looked after. And she stood in the window. I said, when I came back from work, I said, what happened to you? Over there you had a car, this, that. I said, it's just been a few months. We can get a car, but you'd got to know whether you're going to live here or not.
Yeah.
And she won't let me go back to Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how then I started getting used
mm-hmm.
to sort of way of life here.
Why was the delay between your parents coming to the UK and
I didn't want to come.
You just didn't want to come.
But, because I'm the youngest in the family.
Okay.
My mum was too attached to me and she wanted me to come here.
Mm-hmm.
So to call me here, she sort of telephoned us and said, I'm not well. I would like you to come here. So I said, if she's not well, I must go and see her.
Mm-hmm.
So I did come down. I had a return ticket and she wouldn't let me go back.
Mm-hmm. Were you studying over in Africa?
I finished my studies.
What did you study?
I studied structural engineering.
Okay.
I did a diploma.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember my primary school days very clearly because there were lots of cousins and brothers and sisters.
Uh-huh.
I had three brothers and two sisters. And then there were cousins who all of us lived together. So the driver used to come and drop us at school every morning and pick us up again lunchtime, breakfast in the afternoon, pick us up again in the evening. So we were extremely well cared for. And I remembered living in a large family. You have uncles and aunts. So I used to go and say bye to all the aunties and uncles, and each one of them gave me 50 cents. So at the end of the day, I would end up with more money than any one of my brothers or cousins.
Smart.
But it was a lovely feeling.
Yeah.
We still have this affection for each other in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And I miss that joint family thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think in this country, it's very difficult to have large houses. And even sort of finding anything with 10 bedrooms or 12 bedrooms is virtually impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So we miss that way of life.
We miss it. back forward again to when you'd arrived in Leicester. You said you started working. Where did you work?
My first place was Martin's Leicester Limited. It was dyers and finishers.
Okay.
But because I could do structural engineering and metalwork and so on, I started working for them as maintenance men.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can work for your parents or family, no, there wasn't any pressure, you do this, that or other. And when you come to work for somebody else, it was a different way. It was a bit difficult to digest it for a few months, but then eventually got used to it.
Mm-hmm. Who did you stay with family then when you first arrived?
We stayed with family,
your parents already got
Yeah, my
place?
Parents had already got here, so
they
were already settled.
Mm-hmm.
So I come straight home.
Okay. What was Leicester like when you first arrived here, with regard to just the Asian community here, and what was it like?
Leicester was a very quiet place. And first, when we arrived in the city, we lived in Belgrave, and we went through Melton Road, Belgrave Road and Melton Road. And God, I looked at it and said, what a dump, right? It was completely run down, because that area was ready for demolition. And people bought houses cheap there. The community was completely run down. If you looked at buildings, they needed a lot of attention. And the shops, there were some of these old shops like Shanky Brothers and DIY do-it-yourself shops and carpenter shop and lots of various shops. And the supermarket was fine fare. And even Kenya was much more livelier than Leicester was. And Nairobi was much more livelier, being the capital. So I found Leicester to be very, very quiet.
What about socially? What was there to do?
Socially, we had a few friends, but there wasn't anywhere to go. You see, back in Kenya, I had so many friends. Everybody would get together, and in the evening, we would go out and not return home till 2, 3 a.m. And that's what I was really missing, my friends. And it took some doing to get used to it again. And it took me nearly 5 years. I was never settled.
Yeah.
After 5-6 years, I started to feel a little at home.
It took a while.
It took some while.
Yeah. At that point, when did you came in the early 70s. Were there any Hindu temples in Leicester at that point?
That was just the beginning of the first temple that opened on Catherine Street, that's Sri Sanatan Temple. And obviously, my parents used to go there regularly. But me going to work, I hardly went to temple then.
Mm-hmm.
But we still had a temple at home. And by now, I think religion had become a taboo.
Okay.
When you sort of grow up and you have your own mind, and you say, forget it.
I'm working.
But once you've been taught something as a young lad or as a young person, it always stays in back of your mind.
Absolutely. How was it for your parents settling in the UK? Because being a younger person is maybe a little easier to adjust and stuff. But
it was very, very difficult for them.
Difficult.
But what they used to do is they used to go down to India at least once a year or so and go and get away from this. And I remember that since I was born, I had never been back to India. My parents and brothers and sister had been, and I had not. So one day I was passing by Belgrave Road and saw this advert saying cheap tickets to India. And when I came here, my mother wanted me to get married to a nice Hindu girl. And I said, no, I don't want to get married. And she kept bringing or taking us to people's home and saying, look, isn't she a nice girl? I said, maybe to you, not to me. But they tried their best and I said no. But then I went to India and I had my brother-in-law who was in India. She kept writing to him, getting married. And we used to have fun, me and my brother-in-law. What we did is, I used to go with him, never refuse. But what we used to do is to go to somebody's home, have a nice cup of tea, something to eat, and that became a practice. Once in the morning and once in the afternoon. And I remember going to so many different homes. And I think it was in Surat we went to somebody's home. And usually when the girl gets dressed up and everything, they bring tea and they bring something to eat. Rather than watching girls, I was enjoying the sort of food. And she was being brought into the room. And I winked at her, and poor girl dropped the tray. And I said, never again. But went to Baroda and met her. She came to show me the city of Baroda. Uh-huh. And we got hooked.
Fantastic. What was it like going to India for you? I mean, you'd obviously heard quite a lot about it from your family.
I think
family, but
what I did is, first few good months, I was just very fascinated by things in India. Well, one of the things I was really fascinated by was the number of architecture buildings. And when we first went, I was really enjoying myself and seeing things. But as time went by, you know, the money gets less. So I was having problems. Then I wrote to a friend in Kenya, and he came to our wedding from Nairobi. And then we went around, wandering around again. Stayed some 6-8 months in India, wandering around, seeing things. We were together for 3 months.
Okay. So you got married in India?
Yes.
Okay. So then yourself and your wife, you came back to the UK after you
Then we came back to India. This was back in 1977, May. I remember 18th of May, we got married on 8th of March, 77. Then we wandered around for a good few months. And then decided, because I was running out of money, it's time to get home. So we came home.
Yeah. And then did you get your own place or did you stay?
We stayed with my parents.
Yeah,
and
the family, yeah.
Then after 2 years or so on, then we got our own house. And we just got it near each other, so we could still go to each other's home.
Okay.
And then we had our first child, my daughter, in 1982. That was on 3rd of September, 1982.
So at this point, were you still working as a structural engineer?
Yeah.
Do you carry that on, yeah?
Yeah, then I started to work for a different company known as Spencer Gayes. Right, I worked for them for quite many years.
Okay.
And then they closed down in recession. This was in 82s. They were having a tough time, engineering was. And I was made redundant. And I was unemployed for good 6 months, and I used to do some voluntary work because I couldn't sit idle. And at that time there was this new program known as Urban Program, and there were lots of people who were having difficulty getting jobs. So we applied, we got a community together, we applied for some funding, and we were successful in getting funding from Urban Program, that's central government and council, to start training workshop, because I could do metalwork, so woodwork wasn't that difficult. And we started teaching people how to get things which they could get from India, manufactured here locally, by teaching them a trade. And then that expanded. When we started, there were 20 people we were training. And then in a couple of years, we were training 150 people every year. I worked for them till 89.
Mm-hmm.
I got elected on the council in 86.
What made you decide to?
It was because, you know, I said the area was run down.
Mm-hmm.
The government had decided to give grants. And what council was insisting was that if we give you a grant, this is what you get done. And the houses didn't belong to them.
Mm-hmm.
They were private houses. Fine. They were giving grants because they couldn't provide new housing and they couldn't provide anything else. So people received home improvement grants. But the council was insisting that they must get following things done.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, these houses don't belong to you. You don't tell us what we want or what we should have. We will tell you what we want, and that's what you provide the grants for.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a very big argument. And we started Belgrave Residents Association. And I was the founder member, and I was the first secretary, which is still going on. But I'm not involved anymore with them. We won the day. And after a few years, some of the residents said, why don't you stand for us? And I said, fair enough. So I stood. I had no intention of becoming a politician.
Mm-hmm.
But then got so much involved that this is my fifth or sixth election I won since.
Fantastic.
And I've been part of the community. Now I feel at home.
Mm-hmm.
Even if somebody paid me to go somewhere, I wouldn't go. I love this city.
Mm-hmm. we've kind of got a brief outline now of your history and where you're from. But I want to move on and just ask you some questions kind of more to do with the religious side
Please.
Of your life. You're obviously from a very religious background, but could you tell me how your attitudes to religion and religious rituals and things like that have changed over the years? Things change with circumstances, they change, and beliefs change, and things like that. So maybe you could tell me a little bit.
I'm a practicing Hindu, but at the same time, I think some of the culture, some of the backgrounds and which were created within Hinduism were centuries old. And obviously when time changes, what you need to do is you need to be realist. Right? I still believe in some of the scriptures and things which have been said, things such as humanity. And to be honest, there were thousands of gods in Hindus. And fine, the way we look at it is that every person has got God within themselves. You don't need to look for God away from you. And Hindu way of life, these are the simple practices. And I found Hinduism to be quite a liberal religion. It doesn't force anybody into doing things they don't want to do. It explains things, and it's quite a flexible religion. And one of the things Hinduism taught us is respect for humanity. And for that, I'm very pleased. And I'm able to do what I do much more effectively. And Hinduism has never sort of tried converting anyone else into Hinduism. Right? They say, if you feel comfortable, your wish. Right? Likewise, in terms of diet or other things, there are no sort of written practices.
Mm-hmm.
It says, when it comes to food, that you do not kill things for creatures got intellect. Right? You go for the lowest denomination of intellect for food, and that's vegetables,
mm-hmm.
lentils, and things like those. And I think that has been one of the part which has kept me vegan. A few other people, my brothers and cousins, and they eat meat,
mm-hmm.
but that's their choice. And I think something that stuck with me, that animals have life, they have right to exist, and I have had that respect in my mind, and that's kept me to be a vegan.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to love wildlife in Africa, and I said, how could people kill animals and eat them? And I think that's stopped me from eating any meats. I've never tried meat, even when I was little.
Mm-hmm.
I never tried anything, and for that I think I've got a little richness in me, trying to respect living things.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if you look at even vegetables, they're living things, but it doesn't have as much intellect as a bird would have, or a cow would have, or a pig would have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason I've stayed vegan. But I don't mind anybody else eating. If somebody was sitting next to me and wasn't a vegetarian, they ate meat, fine.
Mm-hmm.
Their choice. And from what I've learned in Hindu religion, you don't impose your views on anyone else. Let people have their own beliefs,
mm-hmm.
and you can still coexist. And for that, I think I'm rich.
Okay. Do you believe in karma then, and reincarnation, those things?
To be honest, intellectually,
mm-hmm.
it is very difficult. Fine, I believe that karma you do, you have that sort of life. Right, and to be honest, with modern day science and other things, things have really moved on. I believe in a super being somewhere,
mm-hmm.
but never been able to understand it, so I've never tried really getting into it.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody talked about super being, or fine, then it's God somewhere. But to be honest, it's very difficult, and it's a very intellect argument with anyone to be able to sort of argue that case out for or against, that there is no solution to it.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously the life, the universe and everything else, according to the scriptures, I believe there is something, but at a loss, that what does exist, it's very difficult to identify. There must be, because there are lots of other religion which believes in life after death.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so there is something, but there is no clear indication of what is it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and things such as karma, it's here. You do good, you'll get good rewards for it. You do bad, it's simple.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, I'm talking to you now, and if I expect you to respect me and don't give you respect, then I'm not recipient of respect from you. It's vice versa with each other. If I respect you, you respect me. And if I treat you badly, you would have the same feeling for me, you would have bad feelings for me. And it's simple principle. If you wanted to be treated nicely, treat others the same as you would be treated. And that's been a very successful way of living.
Do you think it's important to do charitable work or volunteer work, those kind of things?
Charitable
in relation
work
to religion, or just in, you do it anyways regardless?
Charitable work is very important to do.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, there are two truths which I know for a fact. Everyone who is born has to die. Right? And it's never been the case. I've never seen a 500 years old chap or a person. Would you like some tea?
I'm fine, thank you.
Sure.
Absolutely, yes.
You can give me some water, please. Basically, that's the principle, that if you do some good, if you got money,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to take it with you. Sorry, I got...
That's
No, please.
Okay. There's a few general questions that I want to ask you. A lot of people are always debating on it, so I like to get people's opinions so then they can come and have varied opinions on these issues. The caste system, do you think that that's still relevant today?
Thanks.
Both in the UK and also in India, because I mean you travel back to India quite a lot, so you see what happens there. How important do you think it is?
I think the caste systems were formed basically to give people a sort of sense of belonging or a job to do. And otherwise the caste system has got no real value as such. I think the only thing I believe in is humanity. Fine. And Hindu religion also doesn't go on caste system. It's created by people. And if somebody was doing, say, job of a carpenter, they became carpenters. But people are people. When any human being is born, they're not born with the religion. They follow the religion the parents follow. Right? So basically the way of life people are taught becomes their religion, and caste system should not exist. There is only one caste on this earth, and that's humanity. And that's as far as I am concerned, I believe in, that people are people and they're all the same. People have different languages, different way of living. But that's dependent on where people come from, how they've been brought up. And I find Hinduism very liberal in those understanding. It's people who believe in different caste systems. They believe in different way of living, different higher and lower castes. There is no such thing as that. If you find, say, two little children playing, they don't have a caste. They'll happily play with each other. It's when they grow up and they are taught things, that's where the indifference starts. But I think everyone belongs to one simple way of caste or way of life is humanity.
Another issue that often arises is the youth of today. Do you feel that they are more or less religious than, say, when you were a youth growing up?
I think if you look at youth of today, mm-hmm. if you look at them realistically, they believe in logic. Right? They don't follow anything blindly. And I think most sensible youth of today have common sense. Right? That they can see good and bad. They can see science and fiction. Right? So if you look at today's youth, they're not all dumb. They're clever. They're much more sensible. They're much more alert. And at times people don't give them the credit that's due to them. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the Education Institute, there are far more sort of younger people going to universities now than ever before. There are far more people who are educated now than ever before. And they believe in science. They believe in reality. Find the religions, if you look at all the religions, no matter Hinduism, Christianity, Islam, there are certain religions which is going downhill. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have such large following anymore. And the reason for it is because if you go back 16th century, religion was the thing. You were educated through religion, you were doing things through religion, and everything was religion related. Mm-hmm. This day and age, not everything is religion related. And it makes a difference.
Do you think it's important for them to learn their mother tongue?
I think basically it's very important for people to learn languages. Mm-hmm. And mother tongue, if you cannot learn your own mother tongue, then you are at a disadvantage. I can give an example of, say, my mother tongue is Gujarati. And if I wasn't able to speak Gujarati, and I went to India, I wouldn't be able to communicate to a number of people if I only spoke English. Likewise, my children both can read, write, and speak Gujarati. Right, and thanks to her, she spent a lot of time with them. Mm-hmm. And that's how they gained their Gujarati.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it is very important for children to be able to speak their mother tongue.
One nearly final question. how do you think things have changed then for Hindus in the UK, say over the last 30 years? Do you think it's easier now for Hindus in the UK?
I think it was never difficult for any religion, really. It was in different people's different beliefs. And in UK, way of living for everyone is much more easier than many other places. I think people have far more freedom of worship here than many other countries I know. Likewise, Africa was very liberal in religion. India, I find things are very liberal, but it's amongst thugs and people who are minded to make their own sort of mark who impose on things. And my belief is that extremism anywhere is not good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How do you identify yourself now? If you know, you've got deep roots in India, lived in Africa for a lot of your life, lived in the UK for a number of years as well. You're a Hindu, but if somebody was to say to you, then you know, who are you? What would you say?
Well, I'm a Hindu. That's no getting away from. But likewise, I'm British. And if my children were asked, "Who are you?" they would say, "We're British."
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, they're practicing Hindus as well. But in the family, we don't impose that you must do this, you must do that, you must not do this. We let children make up their own mind.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me. Then likewise, we intelligent people, we can understand what's happening around us. As Lord Mayor, one of the tasks we have to do is to go to lots of places of worship. We go to lots of different services.
Mm-hmm.
We've been to Methodist, we've been to Anglicans, we've been to Church of England. We go to cathedrals, we go to Catholic churches, wherever we're invited. It doesn't offend us in any way. It's a place of worship.
Mm-hmm.
We respect it for it. And by learning different ways, I think it's enriched our knowledge, our way of life. And by respecting other religions, it's given us a lot of conviction to say that you don't have one religion, we have multi-faith. And there is no harm in other people having a little different belief than you. And if you respect them, you have no problems.
Okay. Where do you see as home now?
I see Leicester as home now.
Mm-hmm.
Fine, I have a lot of affection for India. I've got a lot of affection for Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But my home is Britain.
Okay. Finally then, just to round off the interview, do you have any final thought or final message to give to people who will be listening in the future?
I think the most important thing is believe in any religion you believe in. I am a Hindu, but likewise, I utmostly give respect to other religion. There are lots of different ways of living, but the most important thing is respect for others. And because somebody believes in a different religion to you, they're not different. If you look at the ultimate objective of any religion, is to make better human beings. You read Bible, what is it trying to do? It's trying to make a better human being of you. You read Quran, what is Quran trying to do? It's trying to make a better human being. Right? You look at Srimad Bhagavad Gita, what is Bhagavad Gita trying to do? Make a better human being. You look at any religious scriptures or books, their ultimate objective is better human being. So what's the difference? I don't see any difference in different way of living, right? Even say, for instance, you come from different culture, people eat differently. There might be same loaf of bread, people have several different way of eating it. So it's common to sort of be different. If you're comfortable one way, please do it. But modern day and age, I think religion has a place to make better human being. But there is nothing bigger than humanity.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I hope I've